Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
The best caterers have to be more than great cooks. They're the master generals of entertainment, planning strategy, deploying troops, bolstering morale, and securing victory. A caterer needs to multitask effortlessly while managing the gamut of human emotions that can arise at communal celebrations and family gatherings. Is it any wonder that so many of the most successful caterers are women? Well, joining us now are Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company, who has been catering for 35 years, is also the owner of the Green Table Restaurant at the Chelsea Market, and Lisa Adams of All Good Things. She's a caterer, personal chef, and food blogger. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
What's the most important role a caterer plays for the host or the hostess? How involved do your clients like to be in designing the event?
Well, they like to be involved. I think the caterer's job is really to draw out the vision that each person has for their particular event and then work with them to execute it, prioritizing along the way.
Do you ever have to talk someone out of a bad or a misguided idea?
I find my biggest obstacle is budgets, because people will ask for the moon, and then you tell them what the moon costs, and then they're like, oh, well, I only have $500. I was like, well, you get half the moon. You know, so it's really taking someone's vision and making it affordable for them.
Absolutely right.
How much of your work is planning and organization?
About 50% in our case, I would say, yeah.
And most homes don't have professional kitchens. Is that ever a problem on the kinds of jobs you
do? I'll do the prep in my kitchen and come and finish things in someone else's kitchen.
Yeah, but what happens if they have a stove that is four burners and that's it?
Well, you go first. You see the kitchen. You do a site visit.
Yeah,
you understand.
A walkthrough.
Right. You really want to know what you're walking into, and you plan accordingly. So you design a menu that can be accomplished in the situation.
And then how important is presentation?
Very important. People eat with their eyes, right?
Most definitely. Yeah. I mean, I try to instill confidence in my guests that, you know, people are here to see you. They're really not here to see the food. So it's going to be delicious. It's going to be, you know, this lovely affair. So you lead first, and then the food will be the secondary thing.
And I guess one of the reasons to get a caterer is that frees you to be able to walk around and be the perfect host and hostess. But do you find that people then are uncomfortable with that and want to be part of the catering staff?
Most people who hire caterers for the first time are often uncomfortable with it. And others have grown up with it or been doing it for years and so know exactly the role to play.
Sometimes I'll have a husband that will, you know, is there anything I can do to help? Which is just so charming. I was like, why don't you go out and you know, enjoy your guests, and I'll follow you with the food.
He's used to getting the dishes off the table and perhaps rinsing them off. What do you look for when you're hiring?
I look for someone that's going to support me. And, you know, I have a really great staff of servers and bartenders that I bring. So, yeah, somebody that's going to really support me and make me shine.
What do you look for when you're hiring? Is there such a thing as a typical career path for a caterer?
Well, we have a terrific labor pool in New York City. There are many artists who are pursuing careers in acting or music or painting and dancing and have the opportunity to work freelance and appreciate the performance art that catering is.
So you see a link between the two, the
absolutely.
Creative arts?
Creativity
absolutely.
Is a big part of it.
Yeah.
But has anybody ever come to you and said, I've always just wanted to be a caterer. I'm not a singer-dancer. I'm not a painter.
Well, sometimes, I mean, people's lives take different paths, right? They maintain those interests, but perhaps on a non-professional level, and then continue catering as their profession.
But there's even flexibility. You know, most of the events are going to be in the evening, so they can have their days to audition or be in the studio or whatever, so then it's a great job to hire someone to work your evening shifts.
Mary, didn't you train as an art historian and a potter?
I did major in ceramics in college, yes.
Were food services supposed to be your day job?
Well, no, I moved to New York to find a job. I was looking for work in the art world, but I found cooking to be my most marketable skill. So I pursued it as a career.
You went to work for Eli Zabar?
I did, yes.
Amazing.
Were the clientele there particular about food?
They were. I mean, the quality of the food was high, particularly the brilliant with cheeses. And this was in the late 70s. So women would come in sometimes and say, I'd like to buy some food, but I need somebody to serve it. Would you... is there anybody here who could do that? And I volunteered to do so. And so eventually, that's how my catering business started.
Is it true that you were the first woman to slice fish at Zabar's?
As far as I know, yes. I have a nice scar to show for it,
too. Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
I tried it once. And Mark Fetterman said, stop! That piece of fish is expensive.
Yeah.
Talk about butchering.
That's right. It was a very, very sacred activity.
Do you think that it's important for caterers and for people in general to spend some time in their lives serving the public?
I think
there's a lot
of
talk about the schmooze that occurs when you're behind a counter.
I think it's an excellent training, and one of the reasons why I opened the kiosk in Battery Park was to help kids have summer jobs and learn about serving people and being in customer service. It helps develop your social skills.
I know for me as an artist, because I started out with a BFA in musical theater, and it was all about my ego. And when I became a personal chef, it was all about how can I serve? And so for me to bring artists in to be my staff, this is an opportunity for them to check their ego and serve.
Yeah.
My guests are Lisa Adams of All Good Things, who's had a career in musical theater as well and still works in show business to some degree when she's not catering, working as a personal chef and a food blogger. And Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company, which has been catering for 35 years.
Yeah.
Also, there's the Green Table Restaurant at Chelsea Market. Listeners have been calling in, and they want to know things like, how do you estimate the amounts of food that are needed? Does a lot of food go to waste?
Well, that's a something that really... you learn with experience, and it's really important just to do the math and think about how much a person is actually going to eat at a meal and not to overproduce. The best way to avoid waste is not to overproduce to begin with.
Do you ever, a listener wonders, do you ever say no for logistical reasons? Mary, I gather you recently did a large dinner party on a public beach in the Hamptons. How do you...
That was a few years ago. Yeah, we sent staff.
Do you get permission to do something like that?
Yeah, you can get a permit to have the party, but you can't permit any particular space on the beach. So it was a great day for some of the staff because I got to go out and spend the day on the beach.
So
to
great.
Occupy nice. The location that
nice.
We wanted.
Lisa, do you think that actors think of their jobs in catering and food service as roles?
There is a presentational side of things. I mean, when I was a cater waiter, before I cooked, I started out. And to get to go to these museum openings, to get to go to Broadway openings, there's a huge aspect of, like, you get to see behind the curtain and be part of it.
Yeah. You see wonderful, wonderful places.
You also worked as a nanny. Did you have to do cooking there?
That is how I began. I cooked for this family, and I got to meet Sarah Moulton, who was the executive chef at Gourmet Magazine at the time, and her kids went to school with the kids that I nannied for, and she helped me put together my personal chef business. She said, you're on to something here. And I've been cooking for some of those same families since 1998.
Was that a good idea for you, the idea of working for people who may have known more about food than you did when you were growing up?
Oh, they definitely knew more about food. I grew up in a small town in Missouri, and those years as a nanny were a huge education for me to see what cuisine in New York is like, feeding children, shopping on a budget, you know, food trends. I learned so much. So, yes, they definitely knew more than I did.
Do you think that your acting training helped you in reacting spontaneously to unexpected events?
Troubleshooting, thinking on your feet. Most definitely.
Are there, Mary, disasters that can't be rescued?
Oh, dear. Very, very few. I mean, catering is such teamwork, and we try to put together crews that are just full of talent and experience, and there are many, many things that we can accomplish.
Early in your career, didn't one of your assistants write down the wrong day for an event that you scheduled to cater?
It did happen.
What happened?
Well, the good news was that the location was literally across the street from our shop in Tribeca, so we were able to throw it together really quickly, but it was a terrifying moment.
Never had anything like that happen to you, Lisa?
I was catering a country wedding, a country-themed wedding in upstate New York, and it was dairy-free, gluten-free. And our gluten-free desserts, you know, we whipped our coconut milk, I mean, and it all just collapsed, and the cakes just went sliding. And luckily, the guests, you know, they knew that it was an impossible ask, the weather, the outdoors, you know, so they all kind of rolled with the punches, and we had fun with it, but whew.
A lot of it is really being realistic about what can be accomplished in any given environment, and that's an educational process that we go through in the creative planning process.
That vegan event was a wedding?
It was a wedding.
Was the bride in tears?
No. I mean, she was a really great sport about it.
So she'll just tell the story to her grandchildren. You should have seen what happened when the weather got hot and the cake slid off the table.
That's basically what happened. It was great.
Yeah. Well, how have tastes changed in recent years? You're getting a lot more requests for organic food, locavore food?
You know, Leonard, it's something that we've been doing for 35 years, but there was a time when people would say, oh, Mary, don't let your people know. Don't tell your clients that your food is organic. They'll think it's dirty. And I'm so happy and pleased that, you know, the good food movement has come a long way since then, and now people really seek us out for the kind of quality of food that we produce.
I think there's just so much more awareness now. The conversation is, you know, everywhere. People want better things in their body. And so we can only, you know, supply an opportunity for that.
And I'm sure you get requests involving peanuts, milk, gluten.
There are many, many dietary needs that
gluten is huge. I mean, it's in my 35 years, the gluten-free trend is the most pervasive.
You know, lactose intolerance, I think that's kind of where it began as well. And then people find out, oh, my body reacts to this. Oh, this is inflammatory. Oh, and so we just accommodate. I mean, now it's just part of, that's my first lead-in question, or what dietary needs do you have?
That's right. It's always on the intake form. What are your dietary restrictions?
Well, I'm hearing that question more and more in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a prefix dinner, they'll ask me immediately, are there certain things that you can't eat?
Right, right.
Which I think is great that there's a personal, you know, that the chefs are actually able to make it on the spot, opposed to something that's been made in advance, and here this is, sorry, it's got nuts in it, but I'm going to make it especially for you, so.
Right. That's why it's such a part of the planning process. I have a wedding coming up where we have, just as you did, of gluten-free vegans, which is it's really a challenge, yeah.
You also had one of your staff asked to fill in at a wedding where the rabbi was extremely late.
Very fancy wedding on the Upper East Side, yep. And, you know, the guests were there, black tie, everybody's ready. You know, we're watching the clock as we're, you know. And the rabbi was kind of the one person, that one vendor that we didn't have any contact with.
Sure.
And 10 minutes before the wedding, still not. So Tim, who's a Shakespearean actor.
Ah, that's perfect.
Could command any stage, and also was a universal life minister, this kind of thing.
Was he caterers hired with that in mind?
No, but it's just like we have, you know, there's so many tricks amongst us all, right? You put together these groups of wonderful people, and between us all, we solve problems.
Lisa, is that something you'd envy, a head waiter who also is a Universal Life Church minister?
I'm about to marry one of my best friends, so I'm going to be certified. So I won't need to worry about that. I'll have my own certificate.
Yeah, good. You can do it.
You can take over yourself.
Yes.
If the rabbi or the minister doesn't show up.
Yes.
My guests are two people who are capable of handling a wide range of emergencies, Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company, and Lisa Adams of All Good Things, and we will continue our conversation about catering and related matters after this. We're talking about catering on today's Food Friday show with Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company. She's been catering for 35 years. She's also the owner of a restaurant, which we'll find out how similar the two experiences are. Her restaurant is Green Table. That's in the Chelsea Market. Lisa Adams is at All Good Things. She's a caterer, personal chef, a food blogger, also someone who remains in show business, does voiceovers and related things. And I understand, Lisa, that a good part of your business is cooking and delivering daily meals for some families in the Upper West Side.
Correct. Yes.
They don't cook them in their own kitchens?
No. I find that people in New York City need help with their lifestyle to maintain it, whether that's a nanny, a doorman, a tutor for their children, personal chef, whatever. And so I show up and I fill the refrigerator with food, and so it's magically there. They don't have to think about menu planning, shopping, preparation, cleanup. It's just glorified leftovers in their fridge.
Does that business develop through word of mouth?
I am so fortunate that my business has been completely word of mouth. Those mothers that I started cooking for in 1998 are responsible. They are the cornerstone of my business.
Right.
But there, I assume, also you have to deal with many food preferences.
And I think that's what's so creative, like the creative challenges that we face is like to take someone's needs and then be able to meet them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the greatest.
It is. That's the goal, right? You have to always want to make people happy.
Do you feel like you're part of the family, like you're raising the kids?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm catering the wedding of the daughter of a couple whose wedding I catered. But yeah, you watch kids. That's the first time this year.
Well, you got good word of mouth.
Yeah. No, it's so fun to watch the kids grow up and have their own families. And yeah, it's rewarding.
Did they want similar food? Do you remember what you served their parents?
That'd be cute if you reproduced it all.
Well, no, the mom is saying, you know, she keeps saying to me, our wedding wasn't like this, was it, Mary? Ours was very simple.
Times have changed.
Is it ever really very simple?
It's never simple, although, you know, in the end, you know, something that looks easy is just, you know, because there's been so much backstory gone into it, right? So you want it to look simple, but it's actually extremely complex, and the way you plan for it is how it gets that way, right? Look good in the end.
So have times changed the kinds of food that people want to eat? Are there new do you have to keep on following new trends?
Well, I mean, I've never followed trends, actually, but the trend has sort of come around to what I do, which is kind of wonderful.
How do your Upper West Side ladies react? How did they react when you were hired to cater a commercial that Alicia Keys was doing? Were they supportive?
They rallied behind me and were so excited and texting me, you know, don't forget us when you're rich and famous. And I said, I could never forget you. You're my bread and butter. This is a one-off. And, you know, I shopped Alicia's lunch with the same, you know, shopping that I did. I prepared it all in my kitchen. The same car picked me up to drop it off. And so that was a big light bulb moment for me. Everyone's a VIP when it comes to food, whether you're Alicia Keys or a mom on the Upper West Side trying to feed your kids.
What about the posse, the entourage?
She had a writer on her contract that she, you know, needed these organic gummy bears, this popcorn, this cereal, this whatever. And I thought, oh, that's a funny little list. And so her group all came in and like, where are my gummy bears? Where's my popcorn? So she took care of her group, which was so fantastic to see. She was really looking out for them.
Are there certain things that are hard to find when you're given that kind of list?
We're lucky to live in New York City, yeah, where you can pretty much find anything.
Mary, you had an unusual request from a Saudi prince who was flying Ronald and Nancy Reagan to England when our president was knighted.
Well, he was being knighted by the Queen, right? So they wanted the plane was stopping in New York, and they wanted to pick up food for the trip across the ocean, and so I sent a long list of suggestions, really a kind of a full page, and the assistant said, "That's great." And I said, well, what would you like to have? She said, we'll take it all. Those three people on an airplane for 6 hours. And then in the end, the afterthought was, and could you add 5 sandwiches for the crew and the pilots? It's like,
ooh.
Oh. Yeah. That was the 80s excess.
Wow.
Rather cheap when you are not willing to give the crew and the pilot the kind of food that you're eating.
Awful.
There must have been a lot of leftovers.
Awful. Yeah, that was very wasteful.
When you got started, because you came to catering from other areas, was it hard to deal with the business side?
Oh, for me it was tremendously.
We're creatives.
Artist who became a cook, who became a business person. And
we have to figure out what to charge.
You do, yeah.
My favorite question is, what do you have to spend? And for me, that's the real puzzle and the real reward is when I can make their budget fit. I'm from the Midwest. I pride myself on stretching a buck. But it's really hard when, like I said, people ask for the moon. Well, the moon's expensive.
Right. you need to advise people. Portion control is a big part of that and not over-purchasing and not over-producing. We're about quality, supporting the regional farm and food economy, having the best ingredients. So.
Did you learn from Eli? He knows how to charge.
Oh, my God. It was terrifying. You'd be ringing up someone's order at the cash register and, and all of a sudden the price would go up on it. It's kind of scary. No, I learned how not. I learned a lot about how not to do business from some of the people I work for.
You've also had a couple of big parties where you couldn't collect your fee.
Oh, my, yeah. That was a big learning curve. Because trust is all about, the catering relationship is really about trust. And that's the thing we want to develop in our clients from the get-go. And I'm a very trusting person anyway. So, but I learned you have to collect your money up front because there's no leverage after.
When was the book party?
It was 1,000 Days of Magic. It was Rizzoli Books, Ola Cassini's book about Jackie Kennedy's. The book party was at his home.
And they just stiffed you?
They stiffed me. They said that the event had not been authorized. They had subsequently fired the person who had hired us, and they refused to pay the bill. And it would have cost me more in legal fees to collect it than to...
So just let it go?
Let it go.
The other, now I know how to... get a free party.
Exactly.
The other was a village Halloween party. What happened there?
Oh, that was disastrous. That was a client who had come from the best man of a wedding we had just catered, and he wanted to have a Henry VIII themed event.
Wow.
In his very, very luxurious home.
No knives and forks.
Just turkey legs.
I remember the movie where Charles Lawton just picked
that's
up the chicken
leg. Right. It was quail, and yeah, we did game. It was first he wanted to have a whole set designer come in. Anyway, we did a lot of propping and what have you. It just turned into a terrible all-night debauchery, and I had two of my long-term colleagues who retired from catering after that event. They said that,
that's it.
I'm done. Never again.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, Lisa, you keep on saying you come from the Midwest. You come from farm country?
I do. I was raised on a small 3-acre farm in Joplin, Missouri.
And wasn't your mother from Mexico?
She is from a Spanish-speaking home in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so we're Spanish-American. And she was a teacher and didn't have a lot of time to cook in the kitchen and didn't really enjoy it unless it was Mexican food. So my dad, my sister, and I all became great cooks because of it, if we didn't want Mexican food.
Do you find a lot of people like that if they're... mothers or fathers weren't good cooks, that they wind up learning how to cook out of self-defense or as a form of rebellion?
Well, now with the internet, I mean, anybody can Google anything and be empowered to cook. And I think that's fantastic that so much information is available now to where you don't have to rely on your history.
Yeah. Talking about budgeting, Mary, your mother was a Depression baby and that had an effect.
Well, yes, but at home, when I was growing up, food was the one thing that we were allowed to sort of spend money on, I guess, and do together.
So nice.
We never, ever, ever ate out, so we cooked at home, yeah.
You were both asked for some tips about home entertaining. What kind of advice would you give someone who's going to do it himself or herself? What can they do to make it as easy and smooth as possible?
I think planning is really important, and you have to understand how much time you have to allot to each task and plan a realistic menu that you can accomplish easily so that you can enjoy your guests and not have do ahead as much as you can.
Yeah, I want my hosts to feel like they're actually part of their party and don't have to think twice about the food. And so I encourage them to just trust me, trust my staff. I really create that relationship first. So then there's no doubt. And they never even have to come into the kitchen. The food just magically appears.
But if I wanted to do it myself.
Yes.
Should I go about it as though I were a caterer?
I think you should go about it inviting people you love into your home, feeding them delicious food, and however that shakes down, you know, they're gonna enjoy themselves.
Yeah, it's the most wonderful thing that you can do is to invite somebody to your home for dinner. So you want to make sure that you're setting the mood for the event. That's sort of the most important thing, to everybody enjoy it.
Lisa, you've suggested to use room temperature food.
Yes, I think that is going to really help with your timeline so much that you're not shuffling things in and out of the stove, you know, stirring pasta. You know, if it's all ready and room temperature, then you can...
Room temperature food is fantastic.
What do you do when people arrive too early?
I give them tasks.
Yeah.
I give them something to do. They'll light the candles.
Right.
They'll slice the
make
bread.
Make the drinks.
And then there are the people who arrive late and they still expect to have the same food that people had an hour earlier.
Oh, well, if you know how many people are coming, you try to plan for that. So
yes.
When I cook at home, I always like to cook with leftovers. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
What about children at adult parties?
I love them. Most of my friends have children, and I encourage them to bring their kids. It's so fun to have these little wide-eyed faces in their party clothes running through the crowd, yeah. and they'll help me pass hors d'oeuvres, yeah. and they just lighten the mood, and they, you know, take people's vulnerabilities away, and they're a conversation piece. Yeah. Yeah, I love kids at parties.
Yeah.
Now, Mary, you opened your restaurant after many years of catering.
I did, yeah.
Is there some kind of a thing where they dovetail, other than the fact that you're making food?
Well, I opened the restaurant because I really wanted to have a place where people could come and appreciate where their food came from and enjoy farm product and learn about the regional farm and food economy and supporting it and not have to spend a lot of money on a catered event. So it was, it also gave us a liquor license for the catering business because you have to have an on-premise location where you sell alcohol in order to be able to sell it off-premise.
That's odd.
The SLA is very arcane. And also the Chelsea Market wanted to be open later, and so a restaurant was a help in that regard, too. It helped the community.
And Lisa, you're known for your blog. Does the blog, ideas from the blog, feed the catering business or vice versa?
Most definitely. I'll be inspired with something that I've created for a client, and I'll take pictures, and I can't wait to then weave it into a story with my weekly blog. Sure.
And now you're doing a webcast?
I've got a YouTube channel, and we're trying to make the blog into a book/show. So there's a lot of media on the horizon with all good things, most definitely.
Mary, you've done a book?
Oh, years ago I did a book called The Tribeca Cookbook when the business was in Tribeca, and there were some wonderful restaurants because Tribeca was, you know, was the marketplace of New York City. Washington Market was there, the produce market. I built my first kitchen in a loft that had been a walk-in refrigerator, 1,500 square feet for Crinos Food. So it was, when I first walked in, it smelled like a sheep's pasture, it was feta cheese and
amazing.
All that left over. Yeah, it's been, yeah. yeah, that's the only cookbook I've done.
I contributed to
cookbooks, but yeah.
I thank you both so much for being on our show. I've been speaking with Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company. She's been catering for 35 years. She is the owner of the Green Table Restaurant at the Chelsea Market. Lisa Adams of All Good Things, a caterer, personal chef, food blogger, now also doing things on video. And it's been a real pleasure having you on our show.
Oh,
thank you, Leonard.
To be here,
Leonard.
This has been fantastic.
Thank you.